This is Jerry Dannemiller from the Wexner Center for the Arts in Columbus, Ohio. This is another episode of Transmissions, podcasts from the Wexner Center. Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking with Chuck Helm, who's our Director of Performing Arts here at the Wexner. And specifically, we're going to be talking about New York Theater Company coming to the Wexner in a couple of weeks, by the name of Elevator Repair Service. They've been here several times to the Wexner over the years. This time, they're going to be bringing a work entitled Arguendo, which touches on all sorts of fun topics like First Amendment rights, as well as erotic dancing. And so we'll get the insight from Chuck all around Elevator Repair Service and Arguendo. Again, that's going to be at the Wexner from November 14th through the 17th, but we'll let Chuck tell us more about that and a little bit about his own background since he's been at the Wexner and before he came to the Wexner. So sit back and get ready for another episode of Transmissions, podcast from the Wexner Center for the Arts in Columbus, Ohio. Chuck, the main reason for our talk today we'll be getting into a little bit later. We'll be talking about the Elevator Repair Service, and in a couple weeks here at the Wexner, they'll be bringing their next work, which is called Arguendo. And
One of the shows that we've co-commissioned, too, so along with the Public Theater where it is now, and Arts Emerson, a program up in Boston, as well as the Woolly Mammoth Theater in Washington, D.C. So it was great to be part of a project to help develop this work with all those institutions.
And Arguendo is actually at the Public right now. We're recording this in late October.
And we're the first stop after it's a premiere run at the Public in New York.
That's great. So, but just before we get into that, I think it'd be good for some of the listeners to just to get a little bit of your background here. You've been at the Wexner for 22 years.
Yeah, not from day one. The center opened in 89, but I came in the summer of 91. So I was, you know, in many ways, I mean, I've shaped what the program is and performing arts for the center.
Definitely. And before you came to the Wexner, you were at the Walker Arts Center in Minneapolis, correct?
Yeah, the Walker Arts Center, which is another multidisciplinary contemporary arts center. And, you know, the Walker has been around for many years, and a lot of staff members that have been at the Walker have various positions in the art world all over the world these days. So it's one of those places that's always been sort of it's like a grad school, I guess, for those of us who came up through the contemporary arts world.
Well, that must have been a fertile time when you were in Minneapolis, like in the, what would that be, you know, late 80s and late 80s?
Even before. It was, because I was also lucky that over the years there I had multiple positions. So I was working both in the performing arts area, and I was a music programmer for them, as well as a music writer in the Twin Cities. But I also had contact with the exhibition program, and I was still knew everything about the film program. So I think that kind of grounding and seeing how these disciplines actually, you know, inform each other, and how the relationships of these artists and the various disciplines was something that, you know, is sort of deep in my DNA.
That's great. So, like you said, the opportunity, since you've been at the Wexner for over a couple of decades, the opportunity to work with artists like the Elevator Repair Service on numerous occasions, City Company, Mabu Minds. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. It's specific to theater. I guess I was curious to ask how, in that time, that you've seen the contemporary theater world sort of change in over the last two decades or so.
Well, I think, I mean, in many ways, the things that I've seen are definitely sort of in relationship to the slice of the field that we operate in.
Right.
And the main thing, I think, in the world of performing arts that sort of distinguishes it a bit from, say, visual arts and film is that we're very much about a touring ecology in this country. So, mm-hmm. or even like in the case of Arguendo, co-commissioning, co-producing ecology so that you're working with like-minded institutions that want to develop these new works as well as get them on the road because otherwise they just don't have a life. Mm-hmm. The main thing that I think that's changed in this field of contemporary theater and performance is a bit of over the years I've seen is a bit of a shift from this isn't absolutely true, but there's more of an emphasis today, I think, on original works by independent ensembles. In the past, people were really looking at a lot of solo works or duo works. A lot of this work was sort of grounded in the idea of identity issues, identity politics, and it was hard, you know, so many of the younger artists, they found that that was something that it was actually they could wrap themselves around. They could create something mm-hmm. out of their own life and their own materials. But working with an ensemble was something that took a lot more budget, took a lot more infrastructure. They weren't necessarily interested in it. That's definitely shifted. I mean, there were definitely pioneering ensembles, Wooster Group, Mabu Mines, other artists, Richard Foreman, et cetera, that had been around since I started in this field. And they have been sort of the guideposts for groups like Elevated Repair Service mm-hmm. that definitely come out of that experience. I mean, many of the people from Elevated Repair Service have been kind of involved in the Wooster Group in various roles over the year. In fact, some of them, the best actors that have come through Elevated Repair Service are now performing with the Wooster Group. So there's a lineage there with that. But I think there's a little bit more emphasis now on ensemble work. But at the same time, there's a kind of an upsurge of interest now in different kinds performance activity that's not theater per se, and it's been a while since that's been at the at the forefront of people's ideas too.
Which you maybe begin to see with people like even Young Gene Lee, maybe to an extent, or
not so much Young Gene, but I mean, for instance, I mean when we do our Brazil series here at the first of the year, we're bringing a guy up from Brazil named Michel Groisman, and mm-hmm. it's like a live art practice. It almost relates to visual art, but it's with a human body. Over duration of time, doing this kind of ritualistic activity. It's not about a narrative. It's not about that kind of a shape. It's really about what he can do with the kind of parameters he set up for this kind of set of actions.
Got it. So focusing in on the Elevator Repair Service, who we should mention will be here at the Wexner Center November the 14th through the 17th, and with that there are five performances, 8 p.m. shows on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then a matinee on Saturday and Sunday. Correct.
Matinee and evening on Saturday and Sunday, and just for the public information rather than just hype, we do encourage people to go out and get their tickets in advance for the show. I very much anticipate that all the outreach efforts that we've done to the legal community and other people and their interest in this show, that it's come out of their New York run, that we will sell out the show. And some people that wait are going to find that they're not able to get a ticket.
Yeah. So it's not in a huge theater, a 400 or 500 seat theater. It's in a very small room, and so there are limited tickets. So
yeah.
So make sure and get them. One thing we should mention is that after every performance, there will be post performance discussions with John Collins, the artistic director of the Elevator Repair Service, along with five different professionals and scholars in the legal field, specifically most of them from the Moritz College of Law here at Ohio State. And that's got to be something that is an attractive sort of feature of the run here at the Wexner.
Yeah, and just here's a little thumbnail description of the show itself, so you'll understand why we're bringing in these legal experts to talk with John Collins from ERS. But the show arguendo is a Latin term that in legal circles means for the sake of the argument. So, you know, you put forth a proposition just for the sake of the argument. And in arguendo, Elevator Repair Service are using the verbatim transcript of a 1991 First Amendment case that went before the Supreme Court. And so it is literally all the Supreme Court justices and the lawyers who are presenting the both sides of the argument, which was stemmed on the idea from out of this couple of erotic dancing establishments in Indiana, wanted the right to dance totally nude. Despite state laws banning that activity. And so they get into the whole issue of, is this art, is this conduct, is this covered by free speech?
What is dance?
What is dance? And so, you know, and it's surprisingly funny. I mean, who knew that Antonin Scalia was had such a dry wit about him with some of the things that he comes up with, as well as some of the other justices and just the interaction. I mean, they are really bringing out the theater side of this court process.
Yeah. It's funny because I had an occasion, all of the Supreme Court decisions and arguments are posted online, and I had and we'll include it in the podcast here in a second, but had a opportunity to read Justice Rehnquist, I believe it was, reading the opinion, taken on one hand, it's a very dry recitation of it, but when you imagine Elevator Repair Service sort of verbatim reading the same or performing the same text, it takes on a different life, for sure.
I have the opinion of the court to announce a number 9026, Barnes versus Glenn Theater, Inc., et al. In this case, the respondents are two Indiana establishments who wish to provide totally nude dancing as entertainment and also individual dancers employed there. They sued to enjoin the enforcement of Indiana's public indecency statute.
Yeah, in fact, the origins of the show came about because John Collins, the artistic director of Elevator Repair Service, discovered that all these Supreme Court cases are archived online. And how he got interested in that was that their first show that they did that used a verbatim text was a show called GATS, which has been acclaimed worldwide as one of the most interesting theater productions in many years. And GATS is the verbatim text is the entire book, The Great Gatsby, by Fitzgerald, and it takes like 7 hours to do the show. But it's an amazing show. But he was running into problems because he wanted to obviously do it in New York, where the company's from, and The Great Gatsby had already been licensed to another theatrical entity who were doing a musical version on Broadway. So, I mean, at that time it was kind of absurd because Elevator Repair Service had a very downtown New York, kind of scrappy, all the sets are coming out of the stuff that they find in the dumpsters, literally along, where they live. And they were doing it in really small venues under 100 seats. And so the idea that they were prevented from doing this new production based on The Great Gatsby, in their circumstances, as competitive to this giant Broadway machine that was doing this musical, was kind of absurd. But nonetheless, they had an exclusive rights to do anything related to The Great Gatsby at that time. So John was interested, were there any legal precedents for what's called fair use to go ahead so that they could go ahead and do their show? It turned out there weren't. They had an ironclad right to say no until that term ran out, and then they did bring Gatsby to great success into New York, also at the Public Theater. But while he was doing that, he started just listening for fun to these various things, and he discovered this case and thought, this is kind of, I mean, even though there's moments where the legalese is fairly dense, but he just thought, this is a really interesting thing. We should try to figure a way to put this on stage, and that's what they're doing.
And throughout the, I believe, Elevator Repair Service started in the early 90s, and that's kind of their approach to things, using for the text of their performance, using these kind of what you might think of like non-dramatic source material, or literature in the case of The Great Gatsby, but using sort of non-dramatic source material and then obviously presenting that as the source for the production.
Yeah, we brought them twice, a show called Total Fictional Lie in 98 and later in 2002, Highway to Tomorrow. And when they were just getting going and I was kind of tracking these younger groups. There was a whole group, bunch of younger ensembles coming out in New York that I saw sort of modeling themselves, but doing things different. I mean, it's sort of like at that time, grunge was in music, and so they were the grunge equivalent of ensemble theater coming to New York. And they were, you know, purposely kind of do-it-yourself, and it wasn't slick, polished work by any means whatsoever. And even at that time, they actually had two there was another guy named Steve Beto, who was co-artistic director with John. Steve went on to be the head writer of The Daily Show. He's still kind of involved as one of their board members and things like that. But the company's evolved. I mean, after they did Gats, they did two big productions also based on novels. One was Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury, and the other was Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises, and had huge success in more conventional theaters. And, you know, they had a big run of Gats in London during the what they called the Cultural Olympiad that went along with the Olympics. It was at a West End theater, which is sort of the equivalent of like a, you know, off-Broadway kind of of a setting. It was, you know, they've really changed. So Arguendo, even though they're still using this verbatim text, I mean, it's kind of going back a little bit more to their more experimental roots and trying these kinds of new things out. At the same time, I mean, the sets, certainly more sophisticated than what it does. In fact, the set for Arguendo, they wanted to make a lighter production, not so dependent on sets like these literary novel productions. And there's set elements, but it's also largely a projection screen. And on that projection screen, it's almost like a giant iPad that's constantly sifting through all the legal documents that the people that are presenting the case to the Supreme Court or the Supreme Court is thinking about in terms of precedents that they might, for the sake of the argument, you know, advocate for one side or the other on this particular case. And then when they touch on some idea, like a specific phrase or passage, it zooms in on that text. And so you really, what you're seeing is an amplification of the lawyer's thought process and strategy process as it's taking place in real time, as they're also then having this interaction.
Sure.
As well as this kind of something else that harkens back to ERS's earlier days, this kind of madcap choreography of this shifting positions of everybody in the room relative to the argument.
Right.
So that's also going on, which, and like I say, it has this kind of, it's like a romp in some ways. What is, you know, on the surface you'd think, oh, this is dry material. It's far from it.
Yeah. And also other visual accompaniment throughout on the stage. So we should probably also mention that this is for mature audiences.
Oh yes, there's because again the case is a First Amendment case that deals with the right to perform nude. John felt that, well, how is he going to make that idea like apparent? I'll just say that I'm not going to reveal exactly how he does it, but because he does go there, it is intended for mature audiences. But actually, I realize we just drifted off. The original point was also this whole thing about the post-performance discussion. So after every show, John's going to speak mainly with some of the constitutional law faculty from the Moritz College of Law, who have been really terrific partners with us on this project. And he's doing this wherever the show appears. They're doing it every night in New York. They'll do it every night on tour. And I think it's really terrific because it's an opportunity not only to, you know, kind of, involve our programs with academic partners here at OSU, but also a way to really get more in-depth into the ideas that inform the audience. I mean, the audience is also going to be involved in this conversation. And it's, you know, it's one of the things I think that we've done this in other circumstances with other artists, but to really get at the ideas that inform the evolution of this piece and to be able to hear from the artist their point of view of why they emphasize this aspect or that aspect or why they decided to do the piece in general, it's just it gives you a much richer experience.
And we should also point out that as far as the press reviews for Arguendo, I mean, folks like in the New York Times, like Ben Brantley, gave it a rave review. There was just recently a piece in, I believe, Slate.
Yes.
That you know, kind of went to the same sort of lengths to praise the work. And, you know, it's really one of the – it's certainly one of the highlights of the fall season here at the Wexner Center.
Yes, I mean, in general, we always want. I mean, the Wexner Center has a reputation, you know, nationally and internationally about, particularly about our involvement in the creation and supporting the creation of these new productions, and we like to highlight those. But this one's sort of ideal in that light, in that it has all these other aspects about it too that can bring you know, sort of new ideas to audiences.
That's great. So just to remind folks, it's. Elevator Repair Service Arguendo. I'll be here at the Wexner Center November 14th through the 17th. Tickets as of right now in late October do remain, but they're going to be going quick, so make sure you get them as soon as possible. And thank you, Chuck, for taking the time out to talk with us this morning.
You bet, Jerry.